Right now, it is time for Live from Studio A. I'm Christine Dean, and joining us today, we have a couple of members of a band out of the Twin Cities called The Gated Community. Welcome to Sumanth Gopinath and Beth Hartman. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming in, and you two are here, but apparently there's, what, seven people in the band? Is that the regular lineup?
Yeah, there'll be, in addition to me playing acoustic guitar and singing, and Beth playing the egg shaker and singing, which is what we're doing today, we'll also have a bassist, the banjo player, and other main lead singer, a mandolinist and electric guitarist, and then the other electric guitarist who's joined us recently, and then a drummer. So, yeah.
We take up a lot of space on stage.
Yes.
And we were talking before. And you guys have a new album out this year. It is called We Can Do Anything. And, I'm assuming we're going to talk about that in just a little bit. But why don't you start with a song? Do you want to do something from that album or something different?
Well, we just recorded most of yet another album that we're hoping to release next year. So we'll do one song from that. This is called Breaking Ballad.
You're up to no good, so I lied to fail you, just like you knew I would. I made you love me, I was a part of your life. You'd stand above me, behind the blade of a knife. Say return the sender, that's what it says in the mail. Well, I never end up inside the county jail. Don't have to like it, so just stay out of my way. Don't try to fight it, you know the words to say. But I'm pledging my time. This gift of giving, it perpetrated my crime. The look of crystal still makes me blue. So I'll load my pistol and keep my eye on you.
Members of the Gated Community live from Studio A, giving us a sneak preview of some upcoming music, right?
Yes.
Now, Sumanth, you, I'm assuming, are one of the founding members of the band, right?
Yes.
And Beth, you're a more recent arrival.
I'm the newest member, I believe.
Okay. Yes. Yep. And the band's been around since, what, 2006, right?
Yes. We started in 2006, shortly after I moved to the Twin Cities.
Okay. And you're from Louisiana. What brought you up north?
Well, I have a circuitous route in terms of how I got to the state. I was born outside Chicago when I was a kid. My family moved to Louisiana. And then I went to college in Texas and grad school on the East Coast. And then for my first job, which is I teach at the University of Minnesota, I started teaching in 2005 after school. So that's how I ended up here.
And did you know people there, or did you? How did you end up putting together a band?
It was a combination of meeting different faculty members, actually, at first, who were interested in making music. There are on the faculty of the University of Minnesota, there are actually a number of really pretty talented musicians. And so I happened to meet them socially, and then we started this group. And then I had also randomly, through a woman I was dating at the time, she introduced me to other musicians. So I started playing in their band as well at that time. So some of those members ended up joining this group as well. And then over the years, it's kind of morphed and more people have kind of gone in and out. At one point, I think there were 10 people in it. Someone once described us as being like a cocktail party on stage. And I think that's and sometimes a little too accurate. But,
yeah. So you put out your first album back in 2010 called Power to My Friends, right?
Yes.
And one thing I read, and you can also tell from some of the song titles, there's a lot of humor in what you do, and it sounds like the first album was even more like that, maybe a little novelty stuff in there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. This comes in part from when I was in on the East Coast in New Haven. I was in a country band called The Things Themselves, and that band was started by a guy named Rob Slifkin, who now teaches art history at NYU and just got tenure. So he's a very talented musician and songwriter, and he really kind of showed me what was extremely remarkable and attractive about a whole range of music that really I had kind of ignored because I'd grown up in the South, and in growing up there and not being happy there, I ended up kind of wanting to distance myself from it. So it was really thanks to him that I got into it. And he would do a lot of like funny songs. The novelty thing was very much a part of what he did. He was very influenced by the Holy Modal Rounders and groups like that from the 60s. And so that became an influence on us. And I think we're kind of slowly, maybe a little bit, weaning ourselves from that influence. Although, you know, there's still a novelty-esque number on the new album called The Devil and Zubas.
Devil and Zubas. And just a sense of humor in that I noticed on the first album, there's a song called Wedding Dress. On this album, the new one, Divorce Dress.
Right,
you
right.
know, like, I just, for anybody that's paying attention, there's going to be a little, and a lot of drunk songs.
Yes.
I want to get drunk tonight on
right.
this one.
Very thematically appropriate for country or Americana music.
I want to go back to what you said about, you know, growing up in the South and not being happy with it. Are you saying that the kind of music that you're playing now is the kind of music that you didn't pay much attention to back
yes,
then because you kind of had a bias about it?
Yeah, that's okay. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and you know, I grew up outside New Orleans in a suburb called Slidell. So Slidell is interestingly located in that it's much closer to Mississippi and to kind of part of the area there that actually where country music is quite popular. It's the most conservative parish in Louisiana. It's in a parish called St. Tammany. But just across the lake is New Orleans. And so you get all these New Orleans stations that people listen to really regularly. So I'm much more identified with black music. There's an amazing station there called WWOZ, which plays a lot of like funk and soul, and James Brown is on it all the time. And it's featured in the television series Tremé,
mm-hmm.
Made by the people who made The Wire. And yeah, so that was what I was actually trying to do. But as much as I love that music, I never felt like I could really do it justice.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I got into this country thing, now a while ago, probably over a decade and a half ago, but I was stunned at how my songwriting improved. And I thought, wow, this is something that I feel like I have something to say in, whereas I didn't feel like that was the case with, you know, funk and soul.
That's interesting how the songwriting can be affected by the kind of music, but I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm in general fascinated by the force that music or the arts have over the creator. But too often, people who don't necessarily spend a lot of time making arts think of the arts as, well, I have this thing I want to do, and it's very much about your agency in the process. But so often, you know, a melody or a chord will pull you in a certain direction, and you have to listen to it. And I think if you do that listening properly, that will help you kind of get to a form that will work.
Interesting. So you have the new album out, and where did you do that one?
We recorded that one actually in our house. The man who recorded is named Brian Highhill. He's a very talented recording engineer and trumpeter. He had played for a while with Sunny Night and the Lakers. He works regularly with the people at Secret Stash. He was in Black Market Brass and does recordings. His other band is the Hennepin County Millionaires Club, who share a thematic name similar to ours. And yeah, he did a great job. And we basically had just moved into the house. There wasn't much in there. We tore it down and sort of turned it into a studio. Had the piano tuned, opened it up, moved things around, and treated the partitions of the house sort of like sound chambers.
Mm-hmm. And you had, how many people are on this album? The whole band, the seven or eight people, right?
Yeah, there are eight people on there. So
kind of a big recording project.
Yes. Yeah, it was a lot of people. So we had, at that time, in addition to myself, the fiddle player, Teresa Gowan, and Cody Johnson, the bassist, they were among the original members. We had then relatively recently gotten a new drummer, Paul Hatlelid, also a talented guitarist and singer. And then Scott and Katie Williams, a married couple, had been in the band for a while. They're on the first album. And then Katie's sister, Rosie, is a banjo player and cellist. So she joined the band. And then her husband, at the time boyfriend, now husband, Johnny Becker, then also joined the band. So at that point, we had eight people. And then Beth came in soon after Scott and Katie decided that they didn't want to play music out anymore. They had a baby.
Okay.
That was, but yeah.
I was wondering about that because I think Katie sang on the album. And yes. So Beth kind of came in to do the singing.
Some of her songs, contribute. But also actually Rosie is a very similar voice to Katie.
Okay.
So if you listen to the record, I Want to Get Drunk Tonight is by Rosie.
Okay.
And it's hard to tell them apart in some ways. I mean, both Rosie and Katie are wonderful singers. Mm-hmm. And they grew up in Minnesota, and asked them, how did you learn to sound like this? You didn't grow up around the accents or this music. And they said, oh, we just grew up imitating the Dixie Chicks.
That's funny.
You're stunned by that.
That's funny. I had a question, and it just went away. Where did it go? Well, let's hear another song. That's a good opportunity, then. Let's hear another song. What do you guys want to do next?
Well, we'll do Divorce Dress. You mentioned that
All
one.
All right.
This is the sad divorce song. Beth and I are the divorcees in the band. Otherwise, everyone's married. Teresa, I don't think she's ever been married, but everyone else is pretty much married or coupled up.
Don't care if you go swallow your hair. I don't mind if you treat me unkind. I won't think and pour myself a drink, 'cause it's all too much for one more such and such. It's like I told you, sweet Virginia, it ain't good to live off the fat of the land. I done told you Virginia. Don't you worry or give in to your man. Don't you know it's past time for to go? If you leave, you're gonna have to grieve. While I'm all wound up and drunk from the loving cup, 'cause this is one more end that's coming round the bend. It's like I told you, sweet Virginia, it ain't good to live off the fat of the land. I done told you, sweet Virginia, don't you worry or give in to your man. There's nothing left for peeling back tonight, 'cause it's one cruel ring, but nobody made you wear it. And it lasts a while when something ain't quite right. It's like I told you, sweet Virginia, it ain't good to live off the fat of the land. I done told you, sweet Virginia, don't you worry or give in to your man.
Is members of the Gated Community live from Studio A, and that one is Divorce Dress from their latest album, We Can Do Anything. And I remembered what I was going to ask you.
Okay.
You mentioned the electric guitars players earlier, and that's what I was thinking about was, you know, I've seen you described as kind of a bluegrassy band, but you do have, you know, you said you just added drums recently.
Yes.
And electric guitars, so it sounds like the sound is evolving. How long have you had the electric stuff? Has it always been in the band, or...?
No, actually, yes. I was going to say no, but yeah, we had the electric guitar from the beginning. We're not a bluegrass purist band, and we are members of Mbatma. It's the Minnesota Bluegrass and Old Time Music Association, which is a great organization and has supported us, you know, since we've been here playing at their, you know, fundraisers, events, different performing opportunities and whatnot. But yeah, we fit in the other category. They have a kind of bluegrass and maybe old time and other, and I think that fits us appropriately.
Right.
Yeah. We're other. So there are bluegrass elements to it, and they come out more depending on how we perform, because in some contexts we won't use an electric guitar. The electric guitarist will just play mandolin, and, the drummer won't be able to play that gig, so it'll just be acoustic guitar, fiddle, banjo, mandolin, bass, you know. That's pretty much, you know, fairly standard for a bluegrass ensemble. He doesn't play stand-up bass, but So it kind of depends, and the sound will vary a bit. Like this time, you know, our fiddle player, she goes to France every summer, suffering there longingly. And so we have a second electric guitarist who's playing with us to this show tonight. So that'll change the sound as well.
Mm-hmm. So, well, I was wondering about that, because you said a lot of the members of the band are teachers like you, and so you don't necessarily have a lot of time to do the band, and especially getting so many people together,
yes,
in one place. So it sounds like you've kind of adapted by having sort of a rotating lineup.
Yes, mm-hmm. A little bit. I mean, usually lineups are relatively stable for mm-hmm. some years, and then depending on the situation, if not everyone can play, then we'll mm-hmm. sort of come together in mm-hmm. smaller or larger configurations. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, part of it is that we're working with incredibly talented musicians. I mean, I'm definitely by far the poorest of them, and so to have people like, you know, Johnny Becker and Teresa Gowan and Cody Johnson and Paul Hatlilid, you know, and Rosie Harris, I mean, playing these instruments, I mean, they're stunningly good musicians, so it makes it easy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And it sounds like you are the lyricist of the band, right?
Yes. I mean, I'm basically the songwriter and the leader of the band, so
yeah.
I on the credit, I give the, you know, everyone else some mm-hmm. portion of the copyright credit, because in the unlikely instance that one song were to blow up, and, you know, not by us but by someone else, it would be wrong to do what Robbie Robertson did to the band and basically took all credit for the songwriting. And so, but that said, I mean, they're basically songs I write. So,
well,
write.
And I'm assuming when you have such good players, they probably add. So
yes,
they probably
absolutely.
Suggest and add, and the songs probably evolve as
yes.
you go along. So
yes, mm-hmm. absolutely. I mean, just solos. I don't compose the solos. String arrangements on certain songs. Usually I have a hand in those, or pretty much doing it, but in consultation with Teresa and Rosie. And then with the vocal parts, I usually, again, have a pretty good idea, but sometimes Teresa and Rosie and Beth do them, you know, on their own without me. So mm-hmm. it just depends on circumstance and... Yeah, because we're not doing this full time. Everybody, I think, works, you know, in some regular, you know, relatively steadily paying job.
Mm-hmm,
so,
mm-hmm.
so trying to put things together quickly is often part of the issue.
You mentioned Robbie Robertson, which reminded me that there's a song on this album influenced by Levon Helm.
Yes,
Levon Helm. I don't know which way you're supposed to say it, but
yes.
So you must be a fan of the band, and
I
you
am
seem
a fan
to
of
know
the band.
A lot about it. Now, I had no idea. The song is called "Take Me Down to the Rig." Tell us the story
oh,
behind that,
because yeah.
I had
so,
no clue about this.
So when Helm left the Hawks after, or like it was in the middle of, or after. Some segment of the tour that they were doing with Bob Dylan,
which was
66.
The precursor to the band, right?
Yeah. I don't know if they were called the band at that point.
It was before.
Yeah,
that's,
right.
That's what
yeah,
I'm
exactly.
saying.
Sorry,
like, yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
The,
before
the members,
they were called the band.
Yeah.
But after mm-hmm. Ronnie Hawkins was no longer in it,
mm-hmm.
I think he was burned out by all of the booing and the intense rancor that they were experiencing, because he said it was weird. They were playing these songs, things were going well, and then they'd get these very weird reactions from the audience. And I think he was burned out by that and decided to go work on an oil rig in the Gulf of Mexico for, you know, some time before then he rejoined them, I think, later when they had moved up to Woodstock, and then they were doing the recording that they do for the Basement Tapes, I think. So he wasn't with Dylan when they did the music for Blonde on Blonde, the studio, but then the band joined them afterwards, and then he left, and then they, yeah, that's roughly the trajectory.
Okay, so clearly you're a fan of the band,
knowing
so much about them.
I'm no band completist, but but I do like them,
mm-hmm.
yeah, especially mm-hmm. the first two records.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about your songwriting. You mentioned that, you know, when you were doing a different genre of music, that it didn't quite feel as comfortable. So tell me how that has worked for you how you've developed as a songwriter since you switched to this.
That's a hard question. More than anything, I think once I started writing country songs and feeling like they were working, I started to just continue to write them. I mean, I've probably written hundreds and hundreds of these songs. Most of them we never do. Many of them are bad. And I will say, over time, I feel like my instincts have gotten better. When I notice something is good, then I hang on to it. I try to record it, or I mean, sometimes I'm in places where I don't have a guitar, and so I'll actually notate it in staff notation, or you know, if I have my computer, I'll do it on my, you know, like on a software program called Sibelius, where I can notate things out in staff notation. And then once I have this little kernel, then the thing is to figure out what to do with it, and playing around with it is really important. Trying to kind of work with things, and then being really careful about the lyrics, because I do really care a lot about making sure the lyrics work and that they do the right amount of conveying ambiguity and complexity, but also you know, a certain directness. And they, and you know, and of course, then within the context of what an individual song is trying to do, because of course every song is different. The biggest development that's happened, I would say, in the last few years is that I started to dream songs.
Wow.
And it's very weird. I'll be dreaming in the middle of the night, and something will, you know, will happen, and I come to realize that this is a song that I made up. In the dream, it's rarely do I ever think that it's my song. Often it's some other artist's song or some song that, you know, I hear in a film. Like the song Georgia on the album we just released was the first really prominent dream song I had. And the dream is so weird. I was in a warehouse, kind of not an old factory building, and I was touring it around with Teresa, our fiddle player, and we were looking at the place thinking this might be a good space for some kind of rehearsal space. And so we were talking for a while, then I left. I walked on the road, and then as I looked on the road on to my right, there was a house and all the windows and doors were open, and there was like light streaming out of it, and I thought, this is weird. So I decided to walk in, being a dream, and I walk in, and the room has a kind of, the house has a somewhat circular layout. There's a sort of central room, and there are a lot of flowers and, you know, plants and things, and then there are, I look in the drawers, and you know, chest of drawers, nothing's in them, and I go into one room and I see that there's a bed and there's an old woman, and she's dead, she's been decaying for some time, and I realize, oh, all these flowers must be for her, she must have passed away recently. And then I walk into the next room and I'm in a movie theater, and the credits are rolling, and the song that's playing is Georgia.
Wow. And you remembered it. That's what I find
amazing. I remembered pieces of it. Mm-hmm. So I had to, you know, in the song, it basically had, it was, I remember the guitar part, which is the guitar, the acoustic guitar part, the bass line, and then the vocal part, which was like a simplified version of the verse, and then the final chorus, which repeats over and over again, oh, take a midnight train way down to Georgia. And it was voices that were roughly like Leonard Cohen and Joan Baez. And so I remember I got up that morning, and I said, Beth, you have to come do this with me now. And so I basically got up, I finished the song, and then we recorded it. Yeah. And then,
wow.
And yeah, and I also remember a string line at the ending that was as part of the accumulating ending, the string line came in. And so as Teresa said, it's my John Denver moment in the band. And so the string line did end up becoming part of the string arrangement at the end. So.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, we have time for one more. What do you guys want to finish up with here?
We'll do one song that's actually from our first album. It's called Heaven. And it was written about my grandmother, who actually died not long before we recorded and performed it, although the music was written probably several years before then.
over and over again. Can you help me stifle all my fears of painful death? I am all alone in this world, though I see you here. I am all alone in this world, shaking cold in fear.
That is Sumanth Gopinath and Beth Hartman from The Gated Community, and a tune from their first album, Power to My Friends, right? Well, thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And, you know, since you talk so much about the song Georgia, fascinating story about how that came about, we're going to play that tune off the album so people can get more of an idea about what the full band sounds like.
Fantastic.
But thank you so much, guys. Really a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
It's wonderful
very,
being
very
here.
Very wonderful to be here.
Today's Live from Studio A was produced by me, Christine Dean, with help from Katie Rood. To check out upcoming guests or to listen to previous sessions, go to KUMD.org and click on Live from Studio A under Programs. This is Live from Studio A on 103.3 KUMD. Thanks for listening.